All right, folks, it's welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor. Dr. Brittany Dean is in today. Nice to have you in today, Doc. Missed you yesterday.
Yes. Oh, gosh, I was not here yesterday.
Yeah, but we had a great show nonetheless with Dr. Taylor.
I know. He came in. And today is actually my last show for the next month with you guys. So Dr. Mike is going to be here to take over. But of course, you know, we're still going to have our Women's Wednesdays. I will prep him for Women's Wednesdays. So
I
you and him.
You will. For some reason, I just thought even though you weren't here, we would still have Women's Wednesdays.
Yes, but of course, we're still going to have Women's Wednesdays.
Even though Sunday is Father's Day.
Oh, so
even though this month is men's mental health month.
Yes, and he will be talking about it next week. Okay. It is a big topic and it's something that is very important. But of course, the Wednesdays were dedicated to women, and maybe we can have a Men's Monday.
Maybe we can have a Men's Monday.
So, of course, today we are going to be talking about something that I thought was very relevant because I myself experience it as a woman. And this is sleep problems or sleep disturbances in women or that are prevalent in women. And of course, I just thought it was relevant because I do have a lot of female patients coming to me and saying that they're having problems sleeping or falling asleep or staying asleep. And I mean, I experience it as well, you know, that daytime fatigue. Mm-hmm. And of course, the jet lag that I'm probably going to experience just now. So I thought it was a great topic to bring about today. And of course, while we are talking about a specific topic, I want the listeners to know that they can call in with any question that they have. Mm-hmm. And I know Dr. Taylor, he got a lot of call-ins yesterday, which was very good. Yep. So y'all can call in and ask your questions. And of course, we answer everything here. Call in, send your WhatsApps.
Mm-hmm. Of course, our numbers here. You could call in and message us on our Freedom WhatsApp 3061065, and of course the Sangit WhatsApp and the Sky WhatsApp as well, and we will get your messages. So we're talking about today sleeping disorders.
Yes, sleep disorders that are prevalent in women. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, men will experience the same sleep disorders, but we see it more commonly in women. And of course, I just want to bring light to it or shed light on it because I'm sure that there are women out there who are like, why can't I fall asleep? Why am I not staying asleep? And I just feel like it's important to talk about it and some management systems that may be able to help you at home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So what are the most common sleep disorders that affect women and how do they differ from those that affect men?
Right. So you know how we always say women are different to men because really and truly, it's because of our hormones and our anatomy and all these things that play a role. And throughout our life, our hormones start to fluctuate as women. Now, women are more likely to experience things like insomnia, something like restless leg syndrome, which I'll explain a little later on. And of course, sleep disturbances that come with hormonal changes in different times of our lives. Insomnia, particularly, I would say, is more prevalent among women, with studies actually showing that women are twice as likely to experience this insomnia compared to men. Now, sleep apnea, which is something that we do see in men more likely, and these people are usually overweight, these people are usually obese, and they would be snoring excessively, etc. Mm-hmm. Yes, we traditionally, it's thought to be more common in men. Mm-hmm. It's also very prevalent in women. And what I would say is that it's often underdiagnosed because we have differing symptoms when it comes to certain diagnoses. So in women, sleep apnea will just show up as things like fatigue or even insomnia, whereas in men, it will be the snoring and the trouble breathing, etc. So those are the common things that we do see. And I did mention insomnia and restless leg syndrome. And some women may not even know that they are experiencing restless leg syndrome because, to be fair, myself, before I went to med school, I would experience a lot of these things, but I didn't know there was a name. So something like restless leg syndrome. And I think we had a caller on one of our earlier episodes describing these symptoms. But what I would say is that it's a neurological disorder and it's usually characterized by an uncontrollable urge to move the leg. So I don't know if you've ever been sleeping and your leg just starts to twitch And you're like, why is this happening? Why is my leg just going crazy? And then you get these pins and needles. Some people even get a numbness in their leg. And there's an actual name for that. And it's restless leg syndrome. And of course, with women, we see it more often because of hormonal fluctuations, iron deficiency as well, which is more common in women who are menstruating, who are pregnant, or even during childbirth. And of course, during pregnancy, it is more common in the third trimester. So some women may realize that while they are sleeping in bed or while they're going to sleep, their leg is just twitching uncontrollably, and they don't know why. And it's just a diagnosis called restless leg syndrome. And as we've seen, it is more common in women. So yeah, insomnia, restless leg syndrome, these things, we really do see it very often, especially with the schedules that we have in today's society. I definitely think that insomnia really has become a very big problem, because a lot of us do experience it. And I would say for myself, yes, I do experience it as well. Doctors do experience it. But it really is more prevalent in women.
All right. And what are some of the, how do hormonal changes throughout a woman's life impact on her sleeping patterns?
Right. So, of course, we know that during a woman's life, we have many different layers of hormonal fluctuations. And these things can stem from puberty, menstruation, to pregnancy, to perimenopause or menopause, or even postmenopause. And these things significantly impact your sleep. So estrogen and progesterone influence what I would call our sleep architecture, the way that we sleep, the way that we fall asleep. And it will lead to variations in the quality of our sleep and the duration of our sleep. So when I'm talking about the quality of our sleep, there are different types of sleep. And if we want good quality sleep, we have to practice proper sleep hygiene, which is something that we will get into later on. Yeah, later on in the program. It is, sleep etiquette, sleep hygiene, all these different names for what I'm going to talk about in terms of managing yourself before you go to sleep. So, like we've seen, estrogen, progesterone, all these hormones in our body, it really does play a big or major role in the quality of the sleep we get. So we can sleep for long hours, but if our quality of sleep is not good, we are still going to wake up groggy the next day. We're going to be drowsy. We're going to have fatigue. Or there are some people who can sleep for a short amount of time and have good quality sleep and still feel very well rested. So all of this is dependent on all the things that you are doing before bed, beforehand, and generally your lifestyle as well. So we'll see how that comes into play a little later on in life. So remember that during menstruation, that by itself has a lot of different phases in its cycle. So when we have an increase in the progesterone, during our menstrual cycle, that actually causes more fragmented sleep. So us women, we can fall asleep, then we'll just get up in the middle of the night, and hopefully some of us may be able to fall asleep again, but if we're suffering from insomnia, it may be very difficult to fall asleep. Estrogen, on the other hand, has self or sleep-promoting effects. And once we hit menopause, remember that estrogen declines. So what tends to happen is that after menopause, you're going to have a lot more problems in the sleep area. So you have no more estrogen, or your estrogen is going to rapidly decline. And during menopause, this is where we see a lot of women coming in for insomnia and other occurrences that happen during the nighttime. So something like night sweats may also occur for some of these women. Mm-hmm.
All right, folks, of course, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. We're here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5, and Sandgate 106.1 FM with Dr. Brittany Dean today. We're talking about, sleeping, sleeping disorders. A lot of us may have it. A lot of you all may have it as well, too. What is insomnia, and why is it more prevalent in women than in men?
Right. So insomnia, it really encompasses many different things. It's characterized by a difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, or even waking up too early and not being able to go back to sleep. Now, there are many contributing factors when we're talking about insomnia. And yes, men do experience insomnia as well, and they do have their specific risk factors. However, when it comes to women, we tend to see things like hormonal changes, which I explained before. So, of course, throughout our life, we'll have these fluctuations of hormones, and we will experience insomnia in different ages or different times of our life as well. Women also tend to have higher rates of anxiety and depression. So this by itself, having something like anxiety or depression or any other mental health disorder, will predispose you to symptoms or predispose you to a diagnosis of insomnia as well. And of course, we see women more in caregiving roles or taking up those supportive roles. So they tend to have a lot more on their plates physically and mentally as well, especially those in caregiver roles. And therefore, while their physical body is taking a toll, their mental health is also taking a toll. And sleep patterns also becomes part of your mental health as well. So we also see things like, do you remember I spoke about the restless leg syndrome? And of course, pregnancy and menopause can exacerbate a lot of sleep problems. So some women who do experience restless leg syndrome may also experience insomnia. And of course, pregnant and women going through menopause may experience insomnia more often as well.
Mm-hmm. I know it's snoring actually, and a kind of disorder that some people snore a lot louder than others. What causes that?
Right. So remember I spoke about earlier something called sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. So we usually see snoring in people who suffer from something called obstructive sleep apnea. And I remember I said that these people are usually overweight. Some people may experience snoring, especially if they're extremely, extremely tired. Now, obstructive sleep apnea by itself, it's a sleep disorder that is characterized by repeated interruptions of breathing during sleep. And when I say breathing, it's that snoring sensation. But we usually see the snoring in men, but women can also experience it as well. So what we usually tell patients is that the first thing that you really need to do is lose some weight. Because if you have this pressure in the stomach, if it's from obesity or even if it's from pregnancy, if you're lying down, remember when we're discussing GERD, we're talking about how that weight is going to shift upwards. So sometimes it shifts upwards and causes a blockage in your trachea, or it causes a blockage in your windpipe. And that can actually lead to a lot of snoring or a lot of interruptions in your breathing while you're sleeping. And people who snore very loudly and they are overweight and they have other comorbidities as well, it's very important that you go and you get yourself checked out for obstructive sleep apnea, because it can become very detrimental, because you don't want to stop breathing during your sleep and you don't even know. Or you don't want to start choking. Some people experience a choking sensation with obstructive sleep apnea as well. So it really is something that I would say is very important. And yes, we do see it more in men, but women do experience it as well. And they may not be snoring, but there are other symptoms. The fatigue, the daytime sleepiness, all these things can be as a result of obstructive sleep apnea.
And in terms of insomnia, is there any treatment and cure for like insomnia?
Right. So when we're talking about insomnia, I would definitely say that, of course, there are medical treatments that can be given for insomnia. But before we do that, we always look at the person's sleep hygiene. So sleep hygiene really refers to all the things that you do before you go to bed. Mm-hmm. Is your room clean? Some people can't sleep in a dirty room, or some people may just try to sleep in a dirty room and it may not, adjust well for them. And what I would say is that there are many things that you really should practice before going to sleep. Taking a nice cold shower, making sure your room is clean, taking off all electronics or staying away from your phone about an hour to 2 hours before bedtime, making sure that, you know, your room is dark, because that helps with your circadian rhythm, and making sure that there's not a lot of light in the rooms where you are sleeping as well. So all these things fall into your sleep hygiene and will affect your sleep patterns. And of course, you know, doctors or people who work shift work sometimes, their sleep hygiene may be a little off because they're not blocking out proper time for sleep. You know, 7 to 8 hours per night is what you should ideally be getting in terms of sleep. So if you don't have that proper amount blocked out, you may not be getting a good duration of sleep or a good quality of sleep as right. well.
And before we go for a break, what are some tips for pregnant women? Some tips to get better rest.
Right. So, of course, we know pregnancy will affect sleep. And
so you can't sleep on your belly.
Exactly. So you'll get a lot of physical discomfort while you are lying down. And, of course, the hormonal changes in pregnancy by itself can cause a lot of sleep disturbances. And pregnant women tend to want to urinate more frequently as well. Mm-hmm. So getting up in the middle of the night to have to go to the bathroom really is going to cause a lot of disturbances during sleep. So for pregnant women, I would say the most common things that we do see is insomnia and, of course, the restless leg syndrome and sleep apnea, because remember, the belly is going to push upwards, etc. To improve sleep in pregnant women, like I said before, you want to practice good sleep hygiene. You want to use supportive pillows. So supportive pillows behind your head will actually give you a better quality of sleep as well. Maintaining that regular sleep schedule. So don't try to sleep at 8 p.m. one night and then the next night you're going to sleep at 11 p.m. Try to be consistent with your sleep schedule. Stay hydrated, but you want to limit fluids before bedtime. And we do get a lot of people who come in and say that they don't know why they're urinating so frequently during the nighttime, but you're probably drinking about 2 glasses of water before you go in bed, or a glass of juice, or some people even drink a protein shake, and they don't even know that a protein shake actually increases your filtration rate in your urine, so you're going to pass more urine. And of course, we definitely want pregnant women to practice safe relaxation techniques. Things like prenatal yoga, that will definitely help a lot. And even if you're not pregnant, yoga by itself will be very beneficial to you and to your sleep.
Mm-hmm. All right, so definitely what you have to, some people like to eat before they go to bed. Can that affect your sleep?
It can affect your sleep as well, especially as we saw in a few episodes ago where we talked about acid reflux. If it can affect your sleep if you're suffering, definitely if you're suffering with acid reflux, you don't want to eat at least 2 hours before bedtime, and of course limit the fluids before bedtime as well, because it really, I mean, really and truly, if you want to have very good quality sleep, I wouldn't say that you should be doing that on an empty stomach, but I definitely do not suggest that you should be eating and then lying down to go to bed, because that is going to cause problems, not just for your sleep, but in your gastrointestinal system as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, folks, let's take a break and we come right back. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5 and Sangeet 106.1.
For the past 10 years, Health City Cayman Islands has been providing a comprehensive range of in-house medical services, from routine care to highly complex surgeries. We've transformed healthcare in the region, saving thousands of lives in the process. Recognized for quality and excellence, Health City brings together expert doctors, the best technology, and the latest techniques to provide world-class healthcare to those who need it. Health City Cayman Islands, a decade of healing.
Break was very short, like I said. And don't forget, folks, cricket is going on. So hi to all of those enjoying the cricket later on today as well. We're talking about sleep, you know, sleeping disorders. And, of course, today, Wednesdays, dealing with women. Women's Wednesday. So any woman out there with any problems with sleeping or any of your other issues, male or female, you could give us a call or give us a message, a WhatsApp message at 306-1065, message Sangeet, and message Freedom or Sky 99.5 as well. So what are the challenges women face with sleep during menopause, and how can they manage these issues?
Right. So like we said, menopause comes with a fluctuation in hormones, most notably estrogen becoming a lot lower. And as I mentioned before, estrogen is needed for good quality sleep and helps with a lot of sleep improvement. Now, menopause brings with it a lot of different symptoms. So some women will experience the hot flashes. Some women may also experience the night sweats and, of course, the insomnia because of the declining estrogen levels. So when women do experience these symptoms, this can lead to a lot of frequent awakenings during the night, and of course, poor sleep quality if you're waking up all the time. And of course, there are management strategies for things like this, but I definitely will always say that you want to start off by having a healthy lifestyle. Your diet and exercise becomes very important in your younger years, so that when you get into those menopause years, it will be easier to transition and to give you a better quality of life in terms of all these different things that hit you during menopause. So you want to maintain a cool sleep environment, especially if you know that you will get hot flashes frequently. A cool sleep environment becomes very important. So having a fan on you, having the AC on, all these things will definitely help cool down those hot flashes. Wearing breathable clothing. So you don't want to wear anything tight-fitting to go into bed or anything that you know will cause you to sweat. So wear something, you know, I would always say something cotton-based, something nice, loose-fitting, so that if you do experience those hot flashes, etc., it's easy for you to just, you know, cool down, go by the fan, stand up, etc. And like I said, using the fan and the cooling devices. And of course, practicing relaxation techniques. And this comes into play a lot when we're talking about sleep health and mental health. But it is also good for your physical body as well. So what you will find is that when you do practice these relaxation techniques, know your body is not going to just say, let's not have a hot flash or let's not have a night sweat today. But you will notice that the frequency of these things start to decrease. So relaxation, your sleep health, and your mental and physical health all sort of work together in tandem. Some women may be prescribed things like hormonal replacement therapy, or there are even non-hormonal treatments to help with this estrogen fluctuation. But of course, all these things need to be discussed with a healthcare provider. And I would always suggest that even if you are going to use something over the counter, it is important for you to discuss it with your doctor first, because you never know if you're on any other medication, how it may affect the efficacy of that medication, or if combining them may not be the best idea, especially for you and your specific concerns.
I know you mentioned sleeping with the cooling device as well, the fan. What about the air condition? Is it wise to sleep with your air condition on all night long?
I would definitely suggest that if you are doing something like that, that it's not too cold, because some people tend to wake up with a lot of allergies when it comes to having an AC on, because remember, the air in there is being sort of recycled, and you want to make sure that if your AC has a timer on it that can go on or off, because I know there are some ACs that can do that, you know, give it a chance to come off and put it back on again throughout the night. So once there's a timer, you can do that. But don't get yourself up off a bed to take off and put back on your AC. But make sure that it is on a tolerable level. You know, some people like to pump up the AC.
We have some polar bears.
Yes, exactly. So staying in AC for very long extended periods of time, it's not good for your respiratory system as well. So you want to have a comfortable environment, one where you're not feeling like you're freezing in the North Pole, and also one where you're not feeling like you're just sweating down the place, or your entire bed is full of sweat. So some people prefer a fan, and that is completely fine as well.
Good old Lasco.
Yes.
All right, and what about an anxiety and depression? How does that influence sleep in women?
Right. So when we're talking about anxiety and depression, we have seen in previous episodes that these are mental health conditions that are more prevalent in women. So I would say that even in the symptoms of anxiety and depression, or the things that we use to diagnose these things, we ask about sleep very frequently, or actually every single time we are trying to diagnose anxiety or depression, because both conditions can lead to difficulties in falling asleep and staying asleep, as well as some people may have early morning awakenings. I think that you can differentiate between anxiety and depression even in sleep, because I think anxiety, you fall asleep, but you get up and you have trouble falling asleep again. But in depression, you just have trouble falling asleep. Or even in depression, some people or some women may sleep more than often. So you'll have people who sleep for very long extended hours. And this is called hypersomnia. So some people may stay in bed and sleep for 15 plus hours. And if you're having insomnia, some people just can't fall asleep at all. I would say that they definitely do exacerbate insomnia, and it really does create a vicious cycle where the poor sleep itself will worsen anxiety and depression. So, you know, you may have anxiety and depression, and then you get the bad sleep, and then when you cannot fall asleep or cannot stay asleep, your anxiety gets worse. Why am I not falling asleep? Why am I not staying asleep? And or your depression gets worse. Now, I would say treatment in these cases would definitely involve targeting the underlying mental health condition. And these would be through things like therapy, lifestyle changes, and improving the sleep hygiene of the person. So we will be able to target both the underlying mental health condition as well as the symptom here. Medication is also used in persons with anxiety and depression if it really is severe. But of course, all these things comes after a proper full doctor's consultation and workup, so that, you know, some of these medications have side effects. So we don't just give it to any and anybody. We give it to people who will use it just for these conditions, because some of them can be very addictive.
All right. Mm-hmm. Anna, what role does sleep play in overall women's health, and what are the consequences of chronic sleep deprivation?
So I would say adequate sleep is definitely crucial for holistic health. And when I'm talking about holistic health, I'm talking about your physical health, your emotional and mental well-being. And of course, when we're talking about mental health, not just mental health disorders, but your cognitive health as well. So how can you remember things, you know? How can you go about your daily tasks? And chronic sleep deprivation in women, we found, is linked to an increase in cardiovascular diseases, an increase in obesity, diabetes, as well as a weakened immune function. So you're not able to fight off bacteria or pathogens as well as you should. And of course, we've seen mental health disorders, so depression and anxiety. So even if you started off not having depression and anxiety, if you have insomnia for a prolonged period of time, or if you have any other sleep disturbances for a prolonged period of time, that can actually propel you into a state of depression or anxiety. And of course, like I mentioned, it will impair cognitive function. So memory problems, decreased concentration, and some women, it really affects their daily performance and their quality of life as well.
All right, and what can you discuss the relationship between sleep apnea and women, and why is it often underdiagnosed in women?
Right. So sleep apnea in women, it's often diagnosed, or it's underdiagnosed rather, because I would say these symptoms really do differ from the classic symptoms that we do see in men. Women are more likely to report things like insomnia or fatigue or even headaches in the morning and mood disturbances rather than the loud snoring that we usually see with men who are experiencing obstructive sleep apnea. So not being able to properly have all the symptoms, or knowing that there are symptoms that are unique to women who are facing these sleep apnea problems, it usually leads to misdiagnosis or a delay in the diagnosis of something like sleep apnea. So what I would say is that if there are any women who are experiencing these symptoms, they definitely should undergo a thorough evaluation. And this would probably include a sleep study, because for diagnosing obstructive sleep apnea in men, we still do a sleep study as well. So the sleep study will help confirm the presence of sleep apnea or the lack thereof in some women.
Mm-hmm. Does coffee really help you to stay up?
Because so coffee is a stimulant, mm-hmm. and it has caffeine. So depending on the coffee you're drinking, you know, some people like to drink coffee just because of the taste, and of course because of the sweetness. If you put sweetness in your coffee, but it is supposed to help. It has been proven to help. Even in pre-workouts, you see caffeine in them, because it's a stimulant. It's supposed to make your body go. But particularly for some people, they don't actually feel the effects of coffee until they've had like 3 or 4 cups of coffee, which I think is not a good place to be in, because then you're taking all this caffeine, all this stimulant in, but your body's not responding to it, but it's still in your body. So it is still physiologically causing some sort of reaction in your body itself. And I mean, I'm guilty of that. I can drink 3-4 cups of coffee, and it will be difficult for me to feel that buzz that people do get with coffee. But of course, if you've had sleep to wake up for long periods, studying or being on call, etc., you do need something to help you out, and your body just gets used to it. But it is not particularly a good thing. And one thing I definitely will not recommend to people is energy drinks, because those things have a large amount of caffeine in it, and it has been proven to have to give persons heart problems. So we do see a lot of teenagers or a lot of young persons taking all these energy drinks to stay up and study, etc. I definitely don't recommend something like that.
Now what about sleeping pills? Those people who swear by sleeping pills.
Oh, well, sleeping pills will actually help you fall asleep. And it depends on the sleeping pill too. So there are natural things that you can use. So something like melatonin. But I would usually say that people do get that daytime grogginess, or they do feel that daytime sleepiness the next day, but it will help you fall asleep. So, I mean, it really is more of a natural thing, because we have melatonin occurring naturally in our bodies as well. That is what helps us fall asleep and stay asleep. There are other things. Magnesium glycinate, it really does help with the falling asleep and the staying asleep, but I don't think that you really experience that daytime grogginess with it. And I think it's a good alternative to the melatonin if need be.
Mm-hmm. And no matter male or female, why do we feel sleepy sometimes after we eat?
That is a good question. I think really and truly it is because our nervous system has relaxed so much, because especially if your stomach is really full, it probably plays on different nerves that we have in our body, and it causes this relaxing feeling. So we just tend to want to doze off after sleeping. I'm sure there's a better... that is actually a very good question, and I never really asked about it, or I never really thought about it. But we really just feel it. I think really and truly it's something to do with our nervous system, our neurological system, and the way that we respond to our stomach being full. Maybe it's a stretching mechanism and it really is telling us, well, now you're feeling tired, so go and take a nap. But again, do not suggest lying down after you have had a big meal. And of course, like going in the pool, etc. Some I used to hate that when I was a child. When I would come out of the pool on vacation and my mom would be like, you can't go in the pool for 2 hours after you eat. I of course, children hate that.
Yeah. All right. So what are some, well, you said the lifestyle changes to improve sleep quality for women?
Right. So in terms of lifestyle changes, I definitely would say establishing a consistent sleep schedule is very high on the list, because you can have proper sleep hygiene, you can do everything else that I'm going to suggest, but if you do not have a sleep set schedule that is consistent, if you do not have a blocked out time that is consistent, then everything else is just going to be negligible, because you're not giving yourself the proper time to fall asleep and stay asleep and have a good quality of sleep. Of course, creating a relaxing bedtime routine. So quite often, we see people having a morning routine. So you get up, you brush your teeth, you have some breakfast, you have some coffee, take a shower. You know exactly what you're going to do in the morning. But when it comes to nighttime, people just lapse on that. You know, you come home, you eat, you sit down in front of the TV, and you go and take a shower. And you may go into bed, you may just scroll on your phone, you may just do some work that you brought home from the office. But definitely, creating a nighttime routine is just as important, or I would definitely say it's more important than a morning routine, because the type of sleep or the quality of sleep that you're going to get is going to determine your next day for you.
All right, folks, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1 and Sky 99.5. We take a very short break and come back.
For the past 10 years, Health City Cayman Islands has been providing a comprehensive range of in-house medical services, from routine care to highly complex surgeries. We've transformed healthcare in the region, saving thousands of lives in the process. Recognized for quality and excellence, Health City brings together expert doctors, the best technology, and the latest techniques to provide world-class healthcare to those who need it. Health City Cayman Islands, a decade of healing.
All right, and we get back to our topic of discussion with sleeping disorders. So, where did I reach? What are some of the sleep hygiene, you mentioned sleep hygiene practices, that women can incorporate into their daily routines?
Right, so keeping a regular sleep-wake schedule, so knowing I'm going to sleep at 7 p.m. and waking up at 6 a.m. is really important. So knowing when you're going to fall asleep and when you're going to get up is definitely one of those things that you need to have within your sleep hygiene protocol. And like I said, creating a comfortable sleep environment. Nobody wants to sleep on a mattress that they're not comfortable sleeping on. And your body is going to tell you that, and your mind is going to tell you that subconsciously as well. So if your bed is very uncomfortable for you, then really and truly, you're not going to get a good quality of sleep. And I mean, there are some people who are not in the position to change their mattresses, who are not in the position to do things like that. But you really can create other things in your environment to create a better quality of sleep for you. So, of course, you want to avoid large meals and stimulants before bedtime. And of course, establishing a calming pre-sleep routine like reading or taking a nice warm bath before going to sleep, and limiting the amount of time that you spend on your phone. I know that there are some people who really and truly, they like to take their work home with them. But, you know, home time is for home and work time is for work. And if you really do have to take your work at home, make sure that you cut it off at that time or an hour before you go to sleep, so you don't have to be on your phone and you can just relax your mind and just relax your soul. Limiting your naps throughout the day as well to 20 to 30 minutes and avoiding them late in the evening will also help you maintain a healthy sleep cycle. So there are some people who do like to take their cat naps during the day, but if you are sleeping for 2 to 3 hours in the daytime, you're not going to be able to fall asleep or stay asleep properly throughout the night because your body has already taken up that sleep. So yes, you can take your power naps, but that's about 20 to 30 minutes maximum throughout the day.
Now, I know that it may differ from person to person, but working out, like having some exercise and working out, could that help you sleep or prevent you? Some people are more energetic when they finish workout. Some people might feel tired.
So what I would say is that if you know, so like you said, yeah, it's unique to the person. If you definitely know that you are more tired when you are working out, then you can do your workouts later on in the evening so that by the time you get home, you take your warm bath, you eat your food, and after you've finished all of this, it's like an hour before you sleep, then you'd be able to fall asleep easily. But if you are somebody who takes stimulant or caffeine or pre-workout before you work out, of course, you are going to be pumped up after you're working out. So you're going to feel like, oh, I need to go and go, go, go. And of course, for these people, it's going to be difficult for them to fall asleep or maintain a proper quality or duration of sleep. So I would suggest for these people, definitely working out in the morning or midday might be a better bet for you.
All right, I don't know, you mentioned going to the phone, having the phone before you sleep. I know there are some people who just cannot sleep without having that phone on them, going and scrolling, and that'll put them to sleep. But how does technology affect your sleep?
So from our phone screens, we have something called blue light. And exposure to blue light has actually been proven to suppress our own innate melatonin production, and it makes it harder for us to fall asleep. So remember I told you that melatonin is one of those tablets that you can take, and it really does help with your sleep, and it is something naturally occurring in our bodies. So if we are on our phones constantly, especially at nighttime, that suppresses the production of our own body's melatonin, and that is why it makes it so much harder for us to fall asleep, stay asleep, or have a proper quality of sleep. I would definitely say mitigating this particular point, or mitigating this exposure to blue light, comes with you avoiding the screens before bedtime, at least an hour before bed. And of course, there are things like blue light filters. Some people just put it on their phone, and of course, that doesn't mean that you use your phone right before bed. It still means that you still have to limit the activity, but your melatonin production will not be decreased as much. And engaging in relaxing activities, reading an actual physical book versus a book on a tablet, etc. Because again, the blue light. And practicing mindfulness or meditation before sleep is also going to be important for proper sleep quality.
What about those, some people like those calming teas, and you know, like you
oh,
say,
oh, yes, meditation. Chamomile. Yeah, chamomile tea is very good. It's very calming and soothing. And I definitely, suggest it maybe an hour or two before bed, because remember I said limit the amount of fluids that you take in before bedtime. You don't want to have to be getting up frequently and using the washroom. You're just going to be disturbing your sleep more often than not.
Yeah, what about if you live in a noisy area, a noisy house?
So you can invest in, you know, those little earplugs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Noise cancellation.
Yeah. Not even in noise cancellation, just once it suppresses the noise enough for you to fall asleep, you can invest in something like that. But you really do, if you want the results of good quality sleep, because people tend to bypass sleep health when we're talking about health in general. Your physical, your mental, your emotional, all of that is important. But none of that will actually be fruitful if you don't have proper sleep health. I mean, sleep is something we do every single day, and we tend not to talk about it. We tend not to place emphasis on it, but we have to sleep every single day.
All right, and what are some of the specific nutritional considerations that can help women improve their sleep quality?
So, of course, consuming foods that are rich in magnesium, because remember I said magnesium glycinate by itself in a tablet form can help with improving the duration of your sleep and falling asleep, and improving calcium, increasing calcium in your diet. And all of these things can promote relaxation and melatonin production. So, and also foods that are rich in something called tryptophan. And we will see these in foods like turkey, nuts, seeds, bananas, some dairy products.
Said nuts. I mean, I know another female, but nuts is my favorite.
Yes, nuts.
If I eat nuts, that will help me sleep.
Yes, nuts can help you sleep. Of course, I mean, I would say unsalted nuts,
Nuts, granola.
Yeah, granola. It depends, because granola can be more sugar than actual granola itself. So you really have to look at the nutritional value and look at the amount of sugar and carbs in it. Okay. So granola should be pure fiber. Really and truly. But of course, a lot of these prepackaged granola bars that we see, or all these things that we see, they actually contain more sugar than the good things that are actually good for us. So, of course, avoiding caffeine, alcohol, heavy or spicy meals. So this is not going to be helpful just for sleep health. It's going to be helpful for somebody who's suffering from acid reflux as well. And staying hydrated is important, but of course, limiting the fluids in the evening to reduce the nighttime awakenings is also important. So try to get the bulk of your fluids in, I would say, about up to midday.
And what impact does a caregiving, whether children or elderly parents, have on women's sleep? And what can be done to manage it?
So women tend to be in caregiving roles a lot more than men. So we do have a lot of caregiving responsibilities. And this alone can lead to a lot of sleep disruptions, because women tend to experience more anxiety and depression, etc., and stress because of caregiving roles. And especially if they are taking care of somebody who is sick or somebody who's in need, there's the need for frequent nighttime attention to these persons. So they will be waking up more often than not to give care to somebody else. Now, to manage this, I definitely think that, you know, if you are taking on a caregiving role, it is important to have a proper support system. If it's from family and friends saying, okay, well, today my mental health is not doing well, I didn't get enough sleep last night, so that somebody can pick up the pieces for you. Establishing a sleep routine also that allows for rest and prioritizing your self-care is also important, because while we are taking care of others, it is also important to take care of yourself. You cannot pour from an empty cup. And I always say this, you need to fill yourself before you pour into somebody else. So yes, it is always brilliant and it's always nice to see somebody taking up a caregiving role. But if that is to the detriment of your own self, then maybe it is not the role or the task that you should assign yourself. Or get some help. Get your friends and family to support you. And There are also caregiving services, respite care services that can help in this regard as well. Practicing practicing stress reduction techniques can also help with their improvement in sleep quality.
And finally, can you talk about, I know I mentioned exercise, and for people like to exercise before, but exercise in promoting better sleep for women, and are there particular types of exercise that are most beneficial?
So what we found, and we will see it on every single segment of this show, is that exercise and diet plays a very crucial role in every single disease that we've talked about. Regular exercise promotes better sleep by reducing stress, anxiety, and it has also been proven to reduce depression as well. And of course, it improves your sleep efficiency. So aerobic activities, things like walking, running, swimming, anything to get your heart rate up is always beneficial, not just to your sleep health, but your overall holistic health. And incorporating strength training and yoga as well can be good for your physical body, your sleep health, and relaxation. And of course, it's important to exercise correctly. If you are exercising in the evening, and we did mention some people do feel a little tired after exercising, so they can exercise in the evening, vigorous exercise should be avoided. So nothing to sort of kill out yourself, you know, maybe a mild to moderate type of intensity workout. Because if you're doing something vigorous, you're getting your heart rate pumping at that rate, then it increases your alertness and it will make it harder for one to fall asleep. So morning or early afternoon workouts are really the ideal times to set for promoting better sleep.
Mm-hmm. All right, folks, so it's just about 2 more minutes, Sam. I just said 1 minute as we were talking about sleep today, something that affects both women and, of course, men. But today, mm-hmm. Women's Wednesdays, we dealt into the women. So anything to wrap it up with, you know, how can we really, really ensure getting a better sleep? Of course, stress-free can stress, you know,
yes.
Affect your sleep as well. We know women are always under a lot of stress sometimes.
Of course. And, of course, I want everybody to know your health is your wealth. And I hope that you're living happy and healthy lives. And I will see you all in a month's time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So we want to wish you all the best in all your endeavors. And we know you'll come back, you know, doing well.
Yes. Right. Bye-bye.
All right. So, folks, you've been listening to The Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM.